Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway. So we are back with episode 4 of Paris History avec a Hemingway, and we're finishing up today our Marie Antoinette episode. We left off with Marie being sentenced to death. There was no avoiding it. And I really want to talk a little bit about today, about what happened after, you know, what happened to her kids, what happened to the country. So I'll let Claudine take it from here.
The story about her children, there's one that's, you know, very hopeful and there's one that's actually very sad. But before we get to that, poor Marie Antoinette, on the morning of October 16th at 8 a.m. in 1793, she's only 37 years old. A priest arrived at her cell and, you know, what came to see her, you know, take her confession. So she was sitting there, you know, by herself. She had spent that morning at 4 a.m. writing this very long letter to her sister-in-law, Madame Elizabeth, you know, saying to take care of her, you know, take care of her children, you know, all of how much she loved her, how much she loved her children. You can actually see that letter now. If you go to the conciergerie, there is it where her final cell was. There's a great big marble plaque, a huge, like, with a big painting of her over it. And on that is basically inscribed the letter. So you could go there and read the letter.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. If you read French,
yes. Find it online too. I'll link it on my website. But she, the letter was never given to Madame Elizabeth, which is, you know, very sad, but the letter was never given to her. So on that day at 10 a.m., Samson, who's the name of the executioner, which I think is kind of hilarious because he
was Samson.
To cut her hair.
Oh my God.
Samson. So he came in and cut her hair. Her hair, she always had this kind of blonde, a little bit reddish hair. And during all of this stuff, it started basically right when they got to the temple, her hair changed to like completely to white almost overnight.
So stressful.
And it's actually called the Marie Antoinette syndrome. Like, this actually happens to some people. Like, sometimes you wake up and their hair is white
because they've had so much trauma or stress.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought that, you know, was pretty interesting that that's actually Marie Antoinette syndrome. You know, she came and she just looked, you know, she's only 37 years old. She looked completely like, you know, she looked more like she was probably 77 years old at this point. She just, you know, was a shell of who she was. She just looked sad. She looked depressed. She ended up wearing a dress that she had had from Rose Bertin, who was basically made all of her dresses for her when she was at court. And it was just a simple white dress. She put that on. She put on her favorite little black silk shoes that she had, black satin shoes. And basically they put like a little bonnet on her head, and he tied her hands behind her back and with a rope, and basically just like followed her out. And so they went through the conciergerie. They went down through the courthouse, and they came up these stairs. And if you go there now, you could go see, if you're looking at the courthouse, if you've gone to Saint-Chapelle, walk back when you go to leave, turn around, you're looking at the courthouse. And if you look to the right, there's just kind of a little oval staircase, and it goes down. And that's basically, they took her out there, took her up onto the steps. And, you know, Louis the 16th was taken in this, you know, lovely, beautiful coach when he was taken to the Place de la Révolution. But she was basically put on the back of like a cart that had basically just like a piece of wood stuck on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just more information about how they felt about her.
Yeah. So they just basically like put her up on here, tied her to that. The executioner rode with her the whole time. They went through Paris, you know, and if you know, like the conciergerie to the Place de la Concorde, I mean, it's a, you know, it's probably what, a 25 minute walk.
Yeah, it's a pretty good walk.
But they took hours And they took her slowly through the street because the streets were just completely lined with people, like 12 deep, the entire route on the way. So
she was basically like a parade.
Yeah, so it was like a parade. So they just, you know, were humiliating her yet again. And she just sat there kind of very stoic and just looked straight ahead. They went through, and as they went down the Rue Saint-Honoré, the painter Jacques-Louis David was sitting there and ended up seeing her and did a sketch. So there's a sketch that he did that's in the Louvre that I'll post a picture of it because it's not usually on display because it was just on a piece of paper, just a kind of a black line sketch mm-hmm. of her as she went by.
Wow. So they were able to capture that moment. That's like the one piece of photographic information we have.
Yeah. It's so sad. So they ended up taking her down. They took her into the Place de la Révolution, Place de la Concorde now, and, you know, basically walked her up to the scaffolding where the guillotine was. And as she did, she ended up stepping on his foot, on the executioner's foot. And her last words were basically, "I'm sorry, sir."
At least she was still, you know, a queen till the end, you know. Yeah. She apologized, she stayed sturdy, and so sad that she finally got it together, you know, to figure out how to be a queen. And mm-hmm. then it wasn't until prison.
Yeah. So it was really sad. So, you know, here's all these, you know, men and women, mostly, you know, a lot of women there, you know, and as I said earlier, when she had been wearing, you know, when she wanted to change, when she was queen and wanted some simple dresses made, some just simple white dresses, and she was ridiculed for it. You know, here it is now, she's getting her head chopped off, and all the women in the audience are there wearing these dresses that were basically inspired because of Marie Antoinette.
That's even more disgusting and sad.
I can't even imagine like that was a thing that you did. Like, let's go down to the park, guys, and watch somebody's get their head cut off.
I mean, this was way before television. They needed entertainment. This was the entertainment for the masses, watching people be murdered.
I just don't think that's something I'd ever want to see.
Oh, but, God, no.
You know, it took, you know, the guillotine was created too because it was supposed to be a more humane way to end somebody's life, because the earlier versions of it was like, took a good couple chops to get going. And so this was, you know, the national razor, as they called it, and it just, you know, boop, and it was done. You know, her head was picked up and it was shown to the crowd, and then her body was basically taken to the cemetery of the Madeleine, which is really close to there, and basically just, you know, tossed in there.
And did her head go with it, or just her body?
Yeah, her head went with it. Her head and her body. Sorry. And you know, Louis the 16th was already there, you know, from 10 months earlier. The story is actually it's pretty incredible that, you know, here was this cemetery that was near the Madeleine. There was a man that lived across the street for a long time, and he always would look down and watch it. And he made a note and planted this little tiny tree where he saw them dump her body. And because it was also the same place as Louis the 16th. So for years and years, he watched it. And then after the revolution was over and Louis the 18th comes into power, he reaches out to somebody that he knows that gets to Louis the 18th and says, like, this is where your brother and sister-in-law are.
Oh, and interesting.
So they ended up like going there. They were able to, you know, they dug them up. They took them out. They ended up, you know, taking them. They buried them at Saint-Denis. Then they ended up building this thing, and it's called the Chapelle Expiatoire. You could go there today. It's really like, I had to go there because, you know, I had to go see this. And it's just, it's small. Not a lot of people go there, but there is a kind of a rotund in the middle of it. And if you go down below, you walk down to the crypt below, and you go into this little room, and there's a big black marble altar, and it has a really pretty stained glass window, and it's the exact spot where they found their bodies.
Interesting. So it's still there to be seen.
It's still there. So, I mean, they obviously were taken away, but this was built, and up above it has two statues. There's a statue of Marie with an angel, and then a statue of Louis with the angel. And that was created and paid for by their daughter later down the road.
Oh, yeah. So let's come back to the kids. What happened to their children? They had a son and a daughter.
So poor Louis the 17th, the Dauphin, he ended up dying in the temple. They basically were giving him a ton of food and wine. And I mean, they were kind of horrible to him. And he got pretty sick and ended up dying when he was there in the temple.
So he was still imprisoned as like an 8-year-old child, and they were feeding him alcohol and food.
Yeah. So their first daughter they had, Marie Therese Charlotte, she ended up going with them, obviously, to, you know, the prison. And then their second son is the one that ended up passing away while he was there.
Do we know how long he was there before he died?
He lived like three or four years in there. And then,
oh, 3 or 4 years, yeah, they kept him there.
Yeah. And so Marie Therese, Madame Royale, is, you know, she goes by many different names. But Madame Royale was born in 1778 at Versailles. She was the first daughter. She was the daughter that came after the 7-year drought of consummation.
It was a real drought, people.
It was, a very long time. So she was born at Versailles. She was our first child. She had this beautiful blonde curly hair. She had blue eyes. You know, Marie Antoinette was just completely in love with her. Having a child, you know, basically calmed her down from some of her crazy partying ways that she had. And they, Marie Antoinette and Louis, were actually really hands-on parents, considering what most royals did at the time. Most, you know, royals just basically had the governess basically take care and raise their children. They didn't have anything to do with them. But Marie Antoinette didn't want that. She didn't want that, probably because of the way she was raised. So, you know, she would spend her days with Marie Therese, and they would be running around, you know, out at the Petit Trianon, out at the Hamel. She wanted to raise her so she treated people with respect, that she, you know, took care of her studies, that she was nice to everybody. And, you know, also as a child, you know, Marie Therese didn't always love that.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So it's like 1783, Marie Antoinette fell off a horse and she hit her head on a rock. And, you know, she ended up being okay. But somebody came and told Marie Therese and said, you know, oh, your mom was in this accident. She almost died. And Marie Therese said, well, too bad. Great. Now I could do what I want.
So she was kind of a brat.
Yeah. So because, like, you know, Marie Antoinette was just basically like, no, you don't talk to these people, you know, these, you know, quote unquote, the help. You treat them with respect. These are people too. Mm-hmm. And she didn't, you know, obviously, you know, any little kid's not going to, you know, love that all the time. And what kid hasn't said that, you know, about their parents?
Of course, especially born into royalty where people are just telling you how great you are all the time.
Yeah, exactly. But so, you know, she's, you know, spending all her time as a child, everything's just so idealistic. And she's, you know, playing music and running around the fields. And she's got brothers and sisters. And, you know, everything at Versailles is just great until that night that they ended up having to leave Versailles. So, you know, she's with her parents the whole time there. She's with them at the Tuileries. She's with them when they try to escape. Say she's taken to the temple. So she's in at the temple prison with her family. You know, like it was also a very close time for them. It was a really nice time for them to actually be together. So they're there together, and they end up taking her from them. So, you know, her mom and her dad is dead. Her mom is, they're all separated. She's separated from her mom, her aunt, her brother, everybody. So, you know, Marie Antoinette is taken. She's taken to the conciergerie. We kind of know what ends up happening over there. Marie Therese is just still in the temple. She doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't know that basically her brother is down below her on the floor below her, slowly dying. And so, you know, when her father died, a cannon went off and they knew, like, okay, you know, they knew when her father died. But when her mother died, she didn't know for like almost a year.
That's crazy. So they took her mother away, beheaded her, and no one told her.
Nobody told her. So, you know, here she's, you know, her brother dies. Her aunt gets taken also to the guillotine. She dies. She's in the temple prison all by herself. They called her the orphan of the temple because she's the only, you know, piece of the royal family left. They actually started to treat her a little bit better. Once there was a fall of Robespierre and the terror ended, they changed out the guards. The guards were actually much nicer to her, but she still was there. She still was just in the temple. She stayed there until 1795.
So how many years was that?
She was there from when she was 11 till I think like 18. She was there for like 7 years, basically. She was, well, since the time they left Versailles.
She was a prisoner for like her adolescence, basically.
Yeah. So she ended up, like, they did an exchange with Austria for French prisoners. So, you know, here she was. She was basically taken from the temple. She was shipped back to Austria, her mother's country. She'd never been there. So she was there and she was, you know, with the extended family. She didn't really know anybody there. She didn't feel comfortable. They were actually kind of strange to her as well. She just kind of was sad all day. She wore black. She stayed kind of in mourning. She didn't really want to be around anybody else. She started to kind of start playing with her different, you know, younger relatives. Alex von Fersen came to visit her.
Interesting.
But, you know, she was just basically just here where her mother grew up, which had to also be really hard because she was very, you know, close to her mom, even though, you know, she got mad at her once. But
yeah,
don't we all? But
yeah, you know, relatable.
You know, she was in this place where, you know, her mother had grown up, but it was so foreign to her at the same time. So the Vienna court wanted to marry her off, as they like to do, as, you know, all those families do. But she wanted to marry her cousin, Louis Antoine, who was the son of her uncle Charles X, who was one of the brothers of her father. And so, you know, first they were just like, nope, nope, you're going to marry this guy. But then it was the Emperor of Russia, Paul, which is such a funny name.
Casual. Russian Paul. Russia,
Paul the first, actually kind of got into the middle of it and basically was just like, no, and actually intervened in it. She was actually allowed to be able to marry now her cousin. Her French cousin. So yeah, her father's
brother's kid.
Yeah. So she ended up being able to leave. Louis the 18th was at that time, you know, the king of, you know, even though it wasn't exactly a king, he was basically the king of France. So, but he couldn't live there. Like he wasn't in France at this time. So You still had, you know, everything was still going on there, but she actually said, no, he is the rightful king. So she recognized him as the rightful king. So then he was really happy to have her around. So, and at this point, like people always felt very fondly about her. It wasn't like, oh, you're the spawn of Marie Antoinette. People always looked at her, like, especially the people that were still kind of royalists in their heart. They looked at her as like this, you know, the heir to, you know, the family. So Louis the 18th was basically like, oh yeah, I'm keeping you around. So
yeah, you're good news for me before taking a liking to you.
Yeah. So she married the Duke, and Angoumont, who was her cousin. And they basically just traveled around Europe with Louis the 18th trying to gain support. Once they had the restoration started, they ended up being able to go back to France. So in 1814, she returned to France for the first time after 19 years.
Wow. And after all she'd been through, like being a prisoner, they murdered her family.
Yeah.
You'd think that she'd want nothing to do with France.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that would be a pretty hard thing. So she ends up getting back to Paris. And the first thing she did was she said she wanted to go see her parents' graves. So this time, this is before the Chapelle was built. And so she went to the site and she was able to go see, you know, where they were, their final resting place. They ended up like, that's when it was Louis the 18th that actually ordered to have this chapelle built to mark this. So, you know, once it was being built, like it was in the construction phase, she would go every single day to go visit her parents. And she'd go there and she'd sit there and, you know, she'd go visit them. And, you know, like, especially like you were so young at the same time, you know, I'm sure she didn't completely understand, but you had to understand. But, you know, losing your parents at, you know, technically a pretty young age has got to be, you know, really hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine, especially in such a terrible way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So she would go and visit every single day that she was ended up, you know, giving them money to build, to create these beautiful statues that I'll share some pictures of. But she started to go and travel around France. Her husband was in the military, so he was traveling a lot, so he wasn't there. But they actually had they actually were very much in love, and they actually had a really wonderful marriage. But so she kind of started traveling around France because they saw her as kind of like the standard bearer of the monarchy.
The only survivor of it, really.
Yeah. So Napoleon comes back.
Good old Napoleon.
Good old Napoleon ends up coming back, you know, for the, you know, 100 days, and Louis the 18th leaves, you know, like we said, races out of there. He goes to Belgium and he's over there. And so Marie Therese is basically still in France, and she is, because she's still really admired by people, she ends up going around France and she's trying to rally the troops basically to like fight against Napoleon. Like, you know,
protect her family's legacy.
Yeah. And so here, you know, she's a woman here at this point. It's, you know, the beginning of the 19th century. She's going to these different barracks. She's trying to rally these people. And a lot of people were behind her, but at the same time, they were kind of just like, oh, but, you know, Napoleon and his army is kind of a little stronger. Napoleon actually really admired her and said that she was the only, quote unquote, man of the Bourbon family.
I like that.
Yeah. So she ended up, you know, traveling all over. She would go to this one town and she had this dress. It had different ostrich feathers and ribbons on it. And all of these women and people were like gathering around her, and she was like taking all these things off of her dress to give to them as like a keepsake. And so there is actually one of the feathers is actually in a frame, and it's in the Musée des Arts Décoratifs, which is just, you know, pretty stunning to be able to see. But so she, you know, she's doing all of this stuff. She's trying to gain support for, you know, the royalty for the family. And, but then, you know, Napoleon comes in. And basically, there's like, nope. And she leaves and goes to England.
So she had to give up too, because Napoleon's like, yeah, I support you. You're a dude in my book, but get the hell out. I'm taking over here.
Yeah. And, you know, we also know how that ends too. So after Waterloo, where, you know, which was the demise of Napoleon for the second.
No, boy, no.
Louis the 18th comes back. And at this point, his wife had died. So he has Marie-Therese at his side. Basically, she's kind of like the acting queen. And so she's doing everything for him that the queen should be doing, like, you know, organizing parties, organizing all these different things for him, being kind of like, you know, the woman on his, you know, arm everywhere where they go. And she, you know, still was looked at like, you know, people really still really admired her. So he gave her all these different jewels and stuff. Some of them are in the Galerie d'Apollon in the Louvre, which, like, if you see the beautiful tiara with the huge emerald in the middle, that was one of hers. This stuff is just like the most, the lot
incredible.
Of there is beautiful. A lot of it had belonged to her. So she ended up, you know, here she's seen as this, like, oh, she's so great. And she's bringing back all these lovely times. But then her brother-in-law marries the Duchesse de Berry. So just like her mother, spelled a little bit differently, but her mother
had another Berry in her life
was de Berry at Versailles. And now the daughter has, you know, spelled a little bit different, but there's another de Berry. She comes onto the scene and she's this young and kind of sexy and beautiful and vivacious young woman. Everybody kind of falls in love with her. And now it's like, well, Marie-Therese is like, you know, this is the past. And Du Barry is the future. And she's this beautiful young woman. So she kind of ended up kind of falling out of favor a little bit. Her uncle dies. And then her other uncle, Charles X, ends up coming in and takes the throne. At 45 years old, Marie-Therese is basically now the Dauphine of France.
What happened to her cousin that she married?
Oh, they ended up having a very long life together.
Did they have kids?
No, they didn't. There's a little, the kid thing's coming here. So okay. Charles X ended up abdicating in 1830. And because, you know, there was a whole revolt that, you know, part of what Eugène Delacroix, you know, in his wonderful painting. So this huge, another revolution. He gets tossed out for 3 whole minutes. Marie-Therese was the queen of France.
She did it. Finally.
She was the queen of France. So she ended up actually leaving though. And they ended up going to Northern Italy to Gorizia. And so they ended up going there. She's basically with Charles X. She's with her husband. They're all there. Back in Paris, Du Barry decides to sneak over to France and go into Paris, and she disguises herself as a peasant, and she's trying to go there to, you know, gain some support for Charles X. She ends up hiding in a fireplace.
Bad idea.
Her dress catches on fire, and she's discovered her husband had died a few years before that, coming out of the opera in Paris, and she was pregnant at the time with a baby from him. But at this point, here it's years later, she's pregnant again. She's not married, so she's pregnant with an illegitimate child.
Oh, that's super bad news back then.
She's disgraced. She's kicked out of the Bourbon family. And so her two children she already had ended up, like, Marie Therese took them on, like, took them and basically raised them to be, you know, like, teach them the ideals of, you know, that she was raised with and everything about the royal family and everything they believed in. And her nephew, the son that she ended up basically taking in, ended up becoming Henri V.
And, oh, that's, you know, Henry the Fifth.
Yeah, so, you know, that's not a big name in French history. but he, you know, he never took the crown. He never was, you know, he ended up being in France. He, you know, but it was also looked at as, like, he was kind of also, again, just these old ideals, because Therese was teaching him all these things from, you know, the 18th century and everything he believed in. And at this point, it's, you know, 1850s.
Yeah, it's time to move on with some new ideas.
Yeah, so he ended up, you know, she basically raised these two children as her own, and was completely in love with them. Her husband, they ended up having, you know, this amazing, wonderful life together, and they really, really loved each other. He died before she did, and on October 16th, 1851, on the anniversary of her mother's death, she went to mass, a celebratory mass that was dedicated to her mother, and she wasn't feeling very good. She went home and went back to bed. And a few days later, on October 19th, she died of pneumonia.
Wow. I feel like that's really symbolic.
Yeah. I mean, on their mother, like, that's just, it's pretty amazing.
But it's pretty wild, everything that she did after what she went through. And I'm shocked that the revolutionaries didn't kill her too.
Yeah. I'm too, because they basically were killing anybody that if if you were somebody that dressed her, you got killed.
Like, it wasn't even a choice. Like, anybody involved with the kingdom was murdered, even like their theater troupe or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, her painter, Vigier Lebrun, she left, like, anybody, her dressmaker, her hairstylist, all these people, like, when the revolution started to get going, they fled. They got out of France as fast as they could.
Mm-hmm. And they were right. And they let her live. There must have been someone in hiding helping her in some way.
I think maybe, or they just didn't think of her as a threat. I mean, definitely, like, because she was a girl, the Dauphin definitely was a threat, because he could, you know, if he got older and got enough people behind him, he probably could have ended up taking back the crown.
The one case where being a woman was good back then.
But you were 72 years old. She lived to be 72.
You know, wow.
Once Henry V died, that was basically the end of that, you know, stage of the Bourbon family. Like, he was the last descendant, basically, of what was, you know, there's Louis the 20th, who I met at the Chapelle Expertoire.
You met him?
In January, they do a thing in January to, like, a mass, basically, for Louis the 16th. And I've always wanted to go. And I went, and he's like, oh my goodness, he is so handsome. But as you walked out, you ended up getting to, like, you could go right by up to him and talk to him. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I must.
I'm
and I,
doing like, it. Did you speak French to him?
Yeah. And he, like, gave me bisous. And I was like, oh my goodness, I just kissed what would be King of France.
I think that's on my bucket list. Wow.
We'll go.
Let's do it.
But yeah, so she ended up being, she was buried in Slovenia, which where her husband was and Charles X were buried. And that's where she said she wanted to be buried at the time, because where they were in Northern Italy, it was basically on the edge. And so at that time, it wasn't considered what we considered Slovenia now, but they were all buried there. They ended up getting a slab of French stone. So they're all laying on French stone in their, in their tombs, which I think is kind of interesting. But they've been trying for years to try to bring them back to France, have them interred in France, probably in Saint-Denis. But the monks that oversee where they're buried aren't letting them, because this was her final wish, was to be, you know, she said in her will, she wanted to be buried there next to her husband, next to her uncle.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, why move them? That's what she wanted after all the pain and suffering and having her family murdered.
Right.
They could at least leave her alone in Slovenia.
Yeah. And I mean, if they want to at Saint-Denis, just put up, effigy, because most of the people in Saint-Denis, there's nothing in their tombs anymore after the revolution anyway. So
yeah, just leave it.
One up and we'll go visit.
Exactly. There's no bodies in there. Just put a piece of paper.
It is. Yeah. But it's It's a pretty interesting, very sad story, but a little good came out of it because she ended up having a really long life.
Yeah, I can't believe how long she lived and that she survived all of that. I mean, that is some kind of happy ending. She got to happily marry her first cousin. Yay! Yeah. Happy endings all around.
It's kind of strange.
It was very normal back then and still normal in a lot of countries today. So thank you so much, Claudine. That was a very good ending to our Marie Antoinette series. I hope you guys learned some new things. And don't forget to tune in every Monday as we research a new woman in French history, focusing more on creative women that maybe didn't get as much credit as they deserved.
Thank you for listening to Paris History avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's B-L-E-U, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.